The John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
You found it. You're here. You're headlong down the runaway train that is the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. It's a pleasure to be back with you again today on the program. Got a wonderful guest coming up. I believe it's the third time he's been on because he's got so much information. Mr. Michael Volpe will be with us today to get into CPS. Again, more stuff, more darkness. But before we get into that, check out AnomicAge.com. Share the links, friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. Like all the likes. Subscribe to all the subscriptions. Make sure you check the notifications button. Also, the most important part for me, if you like what I do, if you like this content, information breakdown segments, these full shows, paypal.me/AnomicAge, patreon.com/AnomicAge as well. I could really use the help. I'd love some sponsorship, just a donation, whatever you want to call it. AnomicAge.com is where you can find all that. Also, iPhone app, Android app, sign up for the free newsletter. It's all there. So please check that out. I want to specifically thank the folks in Florida. I've seen a real uptick in the listenership and viewership in Florida. So thanks, folks in Florida. Thank you very much. We'll be getting into, unfortunately, some material from Dade County today. So hold on to your hats. We'll be joined by our guest in just a mere matter of moments. I'm very happy to welcome back into the Anomic Age, Mr. Michael Volpe. Michael has been a freelance investigative journalist since 2010. Since 2013, he has focused on the court system, guardianship, criminal, CPS, and family court. Thank you so much, Michael, for being on the program with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Like I was saying a moment ago, it's always so good to talk to you, and your information is so informative, but at the same time, it's a bit on the dark side, and we're going in that same direction today, and I'm kind of a little bit more freaked out than usual because we're hitting pretty close to home for me. We're talking North Carolina and mm-hmm. Dade County in Florida, so mm-hmm. I suppose kick it off. What do you got for us today?
Right. In 2021, I've done a lot of different investigations, and that's drawn out more people. And so more recently, I've looked at the state of North Carolina, then specifically Miami-Dade. So let me start in North Carolina, and then like the first half of the show, we'll talk about that, and then we'll get into Miami-Dade. And there's definitely a lot of similarities between not just these two, but all throughout the country and really the world. So in North Carolina, I found basically systemic corruption. Number one, DSS likes to swoop in and snatch children. And that, by the way, is a direct quote from a judge named Gordon Miller, who claimed that a DSS lawyer in Forsyth County, one of the counties in North Carolina, her name is Terry Boucher. I called her. She didn't call me back to say if she actually had this power, that she had the power to swoop in and snatch children. And that was a threat that he made to two parents, and we'll talk about that case in a minute. But the second piece is that they do a terrible job investigating child abuse, and that includes the police. Now, I spoke with a retired law enforcement, so it's just one person's opinion, but what he told me is they're lazy, cops in general, that child abuse investigations take more paperwork, that there's an exponentially larger chance of being called to trial. And that combination means they don't like to investigate them because they don't like to do paperwork. They don't like to testify. So they do these terrible jobs. So you, your ex is beating your kids. You try to go to the police. They're terrible. DSS, equally terrible. DSS, there's all sorts of problems. They're not very well trained. The money's not really in investigating child abuse. It's in other things. And then they use these child abuse investigations to throw you into the system. The last thing that I found is multiple nonprofits that I guess you'd call wolves in sheep's clothing, and they both use children in their name. The Children's Law Center out of Wake Forest University, that's in Forsyth County. The Children's Rights Council of North Carolina, it's actually the full title of the Children's Law Center, is the Children's Law Center of Central North Carolina. And the Children's Rights Council, or the Council for Children's Rights, I think is what the other one. Both of them in North Carolina, they provide guardian ad litem, and they claim to protect kids. And what they actually do is they exploit a term called high conflict for their own devices, putting the parents in the vice, not protecting children. So as far as North Carolina and specifically CPS is concerned, any discussion starts with Cherokee County and an investigation by the Associated Press in 2019. Now, it's important to know we always hit on the media, not this investigation. This was excellent. You can still find it. What did they find? Hundreds of cases of caseworkers in that county going in and snatching children. How do they do it? They would pressure these parents with something called a custody and visitation agreement. As it turned out, nice word, right? Agreements. Mm-hmm. It's good, warm and fuzzy. Totally illegal, not actually enforceable. None of this the parents knew. And what you were actually doing was effectively signing your parental rights away. None of this the caseworkers would explain to the parents. This was the subject of the AP investigation. The state took over Cherokee County. They've paid out millions, including, I think it's Hogan, very recently. Multiple people are at least indicted. I don't know how the criminal proceedings have gone through, meaning that all of these things they did were not just illegal, but apparently criminally illegal. And in fact, the lawyer for that particular county was one of the people indicted because they're the ones who dreamed up the custody and visitation agreement. So the other thing I found is that obviously Cherokee County is not the only county that snatches children. So Forsyth County, one of the cases that I followed, Danielle Jesser versus Jeff Therrington, Forsyth snatched her children just temporarily for a few days because she just went absolutely ballistic and got him back. But she was in a hotel because she had sold her house and her new house hadn't been bought yet. And she's got twins. One of the twins opens the door, leaves the room. That happens. That's actually not enough to take the kids. But Forsyth swooped in and snatched her children anyway. And she confronts the caseworker. His name is Kent Webb with two B's. And it's all on audio. And it's on my YouTube channel. You can actually listen to it. And she goes, I want my court order. And he goes, what court order? She goes, the court order taking my kids. Because we don't have a court order. And he tried to get her to sign an agreement. I don't think it was a custody and visitation agreement. But basically, presumably, Forsyth has something like it. Probably not maybe exactly illegal in the same way. But given that a judge thinks that their lawyer can swoop in and snatch children, he tried to pressure her. She wouldn't sign it. He took the kids anyway. So they swoop in, snatch children. I interviewed, and in fact, I'm going to tomorrow do a full interview with her, Katrina Milburn out of neighboring Davidson County. And her daughter was in a car sleeping. She was outside of the car, but a few feet away. Cops show up after that gets called in for, you know, you're not supposed to leave a kid in a car. She gets thrown on the ground. DSS threatens her. That's on video. Take her kid for a year. She gets the child back. A guardian ad litem comes in, has her sign. They called it a memorandum of understanding. Suddenly they take her kid again. So this is a like a multi-pronged problem, effectively. As far as the not investigating allegations of abuse, the poster child for that is probably a woman named Joanne McDowell. I don't know which county this is from, but her case is absolutely notorious. And she believed that her ex was not just molesting the kids, but drugging and molesting them. And when she finally got a positive drug test, they said, you must be putting that into the kids. She fled to Canada. Canada's family court saw the same evidence, gave her a protective order. Her ex can't get near her in Canada. In the U.S., there's an active arrest warrant because they don't believe her. And I don't remember the guy's name, but the prosecutor who charged her, he was recently removed by the North Carolina Supreme Court. If you look it up, you can find it. And she actually was, I don't know if spearhead is the right word, but she definitely was very vocal about getting him removed. But back to the other case out of Forsyth County, Danielle Jester versus Jeff Therrington. This case has everything. So Jeff is basically a very physically abusive guy who appears to be from a powerful family. So as a result, no matter what evidence of abuse is against him, it doesn't matter. So, for instance, there's a witness who told me that he saw Jeff take his then 4-year-old son while he was in a car seat and throw him. No big deal, right? Mm. Two DSS social workers reported that the same 4-year-old told them that his dad put him in a dog crate. Still no big deal. Photos galore of the kids coming back from dad with bruises. Still nothing. You go to DSS. She went to the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office, to family court. Nothing. No one will investigate it properly. No one will do anything. And so she's basically put into a vice. And in the meantime, they open investigations that turn fruitless. And now they've got her in the system. And they've got Danielle Jester into something called in-home services, which just happens to give them a lot of federal funds. And the last thing, and this is, I guess, sort of breaking news, she had these sort of high-powered attorneys. And I want to – I don't know if we can read it. But so her attorney, she's got – Danielle has her custody trial will be completed on June 26, 2021. And this is a recent motion from her lawyers. Now comes the undersigned attorney of record. Oh, wait a minute. That's and alleges that the defendant, Danielle Jester, retained P. Scott Harvey, Paul K. Mengert, and the attorneys of Scott Law Group as attorneys of record for the of Caption Manor. That good cause exists for the withdrawal of counsel. Wherefore the undersigned prays. So they want to withdraw. And this is set for a hearing on July 12th on the eve of trial. And did you hear a reason? It just says good cause. They don't give the cause. They don't. You want to guess what the reason might be?
I don't have no idea.
They wanted more money, I think, and they couldn't get it. And that's actually quite common. And I have a contact named Melinda Sherman. She's like an activist slash court watcher. And she gave me a statement that I want to read because she said this is very common. You should all be very aware of lawyers like J. Scott Harvey and the Scott Law Firm. And so here is the statement. Hi, lawyers recuse themselves for cases when their retainer runs out or if the verbal promises they have made fall by the wayside and they are called out on their failure to fight for their client. Suggestions. Attorneys are most hungry at the beginning of the case. That is when you have your attorney put in writing their strategy to win your case. When does any person retain services from a professional without a full understanding of what they plan to do for you? Get it in writing before you pay the first retainer and when they come back for more money. Mr. and Mrs. Family Law Attorney, put your plan strategy to represent me and your retainer or you don't get any of my money. And that is absolutely the case. And one other thing about this particular case. There's a guardian ad litem on the case. She's from the Children's Law Center. Her name is Sarah Royster. So she was cross-examined by Mengert, I think. He did earn his money during the cross-examination. She was well aware of the dog crate incident, and she did everything she could to distance herself, and she even claimed, I'm not an investigator, right? Now, I want to read you one other thing. She claimed, I'm not an investigator, and that's why she didn't investigate it. So this is from the Children's Law Center website. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The guardian ad litem is responsible for investigating all aspects of the case and making recommendations regarding custody and visitation. Like, you may know this. Not everyone knows this. The FDA was originally created because food and what they called patent medicine at the time would make any claim they wanted. Your cereal will cure cancer.
Yeah,
and that's where they get snake oil salesmen because you could sell snake oil, claim whatever you wanted. You can't do that now. This is the equivalent. Can you imagine putting on your website, we investigate all aspects of the case, and then you go, why didn't you investigate the dog crate?
I'm not an investigator.
All right. So now here's what's crazy. So there's another case with the Children's Law Center, Forsyth DSS, and the same judge, Gordon Miller, right? Melissa Toon and her ex, Tyson Patterson, who was a local legend, who was a basketball player for Appalachian State, became an All-American. You probably don't know him. Apparently, like in that central North Carolina, he's a big deal. All right. Not Michael Jordan played some years pro in Europe. So she makes accusations against him. He makes accusations against her. And it seems like the only accusations that they find unfounded are the ones she makes against him. However, here's what I found. It's not actually Melissa making the accusations most of the time. It's her daughter. So her daughter disclosed that one of his relatives was touching her. But here's the strongest piece of evidence that I found. Tell me what you think of this. And then I'll tell you about the Children's Law Center's involvement. One of her friends said that Melissa came over with her daughter, and her friend has children. And Melissa and her friend are in the kitchen. The kids are playing in another room. One of the woman's friend's daughter, the woman's daughter, the woman's children, one of them comes into the kitchen. Mom, you've got to see this. Something bad was happening. They run into the next room. Here's what they see: Melissa's daughter. She's got her pants down. She's reaching for the other girl's crotch. She's encouraging or coercing the other girl to touch her crotch.
Good Lord.
It's a pretty descriptive, right? Pretty strong. So how are they saying it's unfounded? That's not Melissa's allegation. That comes from an affidavit that her friend made. And by the way, her friend's daughter saw this. The girl, you know, you can verify all of this, yet somehow they keep saying that Melissa's making unfounded allegations. So Children's Law Center is involved in that case. And now Sarah Royster was the guardian ad litem in the first one. In this one, it's a woman named Charlisa Powell. So she is testifying, and she said she got a call from Tyson. And Tyson says, my daughter's afraid of Melissa. All of a sudden, out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Well, you probably should call DSS, Sarah, or Charlisa says. He goes, oh, it's a bad idea. I've called them a lot. She's called them a lot. I don't think that's a good idea. So Charlisa, hearing that, says, I'll investigate. Now, when Sarah testified, she said one reason why she didn't ask the boy if he had been put in a dog cage is because it's traumatizing to constantly talk about traumatic events, supposedly, for kids. Right? Charlisa takes a complete opposite approach. She interviews the girl. When the girl shuts down, she has the girl draw pictures. And the girl draws a picture with her mom of a heart with, like, some bad stuff through it. So I guess, like, she broke my heart or something. And Charlisa said, I don't know what happened. I'm not sure what's happening. But I do know your daughter drew this picture of a heart. So maybe, possibly, it's not a good idea you see her until we figure it out. So think about it. Same firm. In one case, two social workers tell you that a boy said he was put in a dog cage and you distance yourself. In another case, dad tells you the girl is afraid of her mom and you think that's good enough reason to fully investigate. And when she couldn't, she then forwarded it to DSS for more investigation, even though the other lady's saying that's traumatic. And you recommend that in the meantime, mom be cut off from child. Does that seem consistent to you? No, not at all. And why? Because these guardian ad litem, they have no oversight. Okay? They don't have an FDA. They have nothing. Okay? I called the legislature. I doubt the legislature has any rules for these people. They do whatever they want. And this, by the way, is not just North Carolina. It's wherever. And in the Children's Rights Council, the one story I have, Breanne Hudson, her ex abandons the family for years at a time, tries to come back. Kids are resistant. So the Children's Rights Council says mom must be alienating the children. And now in the last couple of years, it's mom who hasn't seen the children almost at all based on their recommendations. And this is what they do. And look, I've done where the man has been the victim. The poster child for that is a guy named Neil Shelton out of Surrey County, who was arrested almost 100 times. His ex-wife hired a woman named Sarah Stevens, who is also the president pro tempore of the New York State House. She's a very powerful state legislator who then uses her power to be a she's allowed to be a divorce attorney. So she had him arrested a bunch of times. While he was arrested one time, they had the divorce done without him, essentially. He got nothing. He hasn't seen his children in 9 years. And lastly, there's a guy named Randy Davis who has a pretty notorious case. And they just basically showed up one day, took his daughter, threw her in foster care. She ran. They tried to charge him because they claimed that he was illegally contacting his daughter. Imagine that.
Was that North Carolina too?
Yeah, Randy Davis. Look him up. That happened in like 2013, 14, and 15. He got his daughter back, and he's now a grandfather. His daughter had a child that they may go after someday. But basically, he told me that she was in honors classes when she was 16. They just swoop in, snatch her, grab her, and take her away. One other thing, Gordon Miller was the presiding judge, Jester, and the swimmer Melissa Toon. There's amazing audio of a recusal hearing where Melissa just brings up that she thinks there might be a document that's forged. And he, without allowing her to present any evidence, says, if you present this without presenting any evidence, I'm going to hold you in criminal contempt of court. He threatened to put her in jail just for bringing it up.
This is and a judge,
should,
right?
By the way, you guys should hear this. It's Gordon Miller recusal hearing. It's on my YouTube channel. The first 9 minutes is nothing. The way he treats her with contempt, and then he talks to the lawyer for her ex, and it's all like polite and kind. And like the bias is so palpable. Of course you're not allowed to do that. Of course judges are supposed to be sanctioned for a clear bias. And yet here and of course all judges have bias against pro se litigants. And here it is, and it's so obvious, and nobody cares. Nobody cares that this woman is being threatened with jail, and yet when he talks to the other lawyer, it's all kind and respectful. And that's cool, right? That's fine. One person is treated with contempt. The other person is treated with respect. It's totally cool in North Carolina that lawyers can try to extort money from you. And if you don't get it, they'll just withdraw from your case on the eve of your trial. It's totally cool. Why do you think kids are put in danger?
Jeez.
That's why, because all of these rules, there are no rules. And look, I called the bar. I don't know. Is this really a rule? Because there, obviously it is. The judge is hearing it. The judge thinks it's – I read you the motion. They gave no reason. None. Zero. They gave no reason. Let me read the motion again. Here's the motion to withdraw. Hold on. This will be fun. Here it is. All right. That defendant – Danielle Jester retained P. Scott Harvey, Paul K. Mengert, and the attorneys of Scott Law Group as attorneys of record in the above captioned manner. That good cause exists for withdrawal of counsel. That's it. They don't say what that good cause is.
That's insane.
Right. That, I guess the, and there's enough rules that you can at least hear this. Now, I don't know what the rules are. If that's the motion, you're not supposed to present any more evidence. Presumably, a judge is going to let them withdraw just for saying good cause exists. Her ex beats the kids, puts the kids in a dog crate. They don't care about that. They didn't get their money. So they're just going to withdraw, throw her to a lurch. And so I was talking with Melinda about this. And as soon as she heard the setup, she goes, they always do that, meaning divorce lawyers. And they go, exactly. And how many times have they been called out? Never. So let's start with these guys. The Scott Law Firm, I think it's Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. If you want to get them, keep in mind, you'll pay them. And then once you're close to something important, they'll probably ask you for more money. Because that's how lawyers are in the divorce industry. And somehow that's okay. And so unless you got questions, I think that's the wrap-up for North Carolina.
It shouldn't be startling, but it still is. So they're right. Just basically – extorting money from people to lawyers. And the so sick part of this whole thing is that they're using kids as the bargaining chip. That's mm-hmm. the carrot. Instead mm-hmm. of the carrot, it's the kids. And mm-hmm. they know that the parents, no matter what, are going to do whatever it takes to get the kids or to protect the kids from harm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And these.
Right. And by the way, so I don't know exactly how much they're asking for, but let's say it's $5,000. She got 2 4-year-olds and they're twins. What if she put $2,500 for each of their college funds? I bet she'd have a really nice college fund by the time they're 18. But no. The Scott Law Firm thinks it's their money. So it's either the college fund. Well, there is no college fund. It's either protect them from your abusive ex, who, of course, hit her as well. You know, puts kids in a dog cage. And by the way, in that same hearing, this is a great quote from Gordon Miller. He, and I think he noticed that Royster was getting killed. So he interjects. You know, judges can interject because they're a judge. But he had no reason to interject. So he interjects and he goes, I think we can all agree it's almost never appropriate to put a kid in a dog cage. Let me repeat that. I think we can all agree it's almost never appropriate to put a kid in a dog cage. But we don't know the context.
It's just so sick. I mean, I keep coming back to this same point, and I know I've said this before, but it's just unfathomable to me that people like this exist. I don't care whose kids it is. I mean, there's kids I don't even know out there that are living mm-hmm. across the street, and I would do everything I could to protect them. I sure as hell wouldn't do anything to put them in harm's way. I don't even know them.
And one of the reasons I bring up that motion to withdraw, I think what happened was I put a lot of pressure on the original trial happened April 15th, and I was asking a lot of questions in as it was about to happen. And so they held it, but then they stopped it, and they withdrew the guardian ad litem, Sarah Royster, the lady who doesn't really care about the kid in the dog cage, right? Mm-hmm. And then they rescheduled it for the end of July. And I think that only happened because of my pressure. And so that gave these guys an excuse to ask for more money. So the reason she's being extorted is because of me. So that's one of the reasons why I feel a little bit more responsibility, because I think I caused this. Now, look, Sarah Royster was going to, despite him putting a kid in a dog cage, throwing the kid and everything else, that he should get plenty of custody time. So I don't know if the judge is going to go with her recommendation, but, you know, it looked like it was going to be even worse. But basically, the judge feels pressure. He puts pressure on the lawyer puts pressure on the parent. The parent, in order, I guess in the state of North Carolina, you have to have at least $20,000, $25,000 to protect your children. Anything less and the abuser gets custody. That's what it appears to be. Scott Law Firm over in Winston-Salem, if you find, call them and ask them, is it really true that you wanted to drop your client 2 weeks before a custody trial? If they say no, you'll see, so there wasn't a motion scheduled for July 12th. Wasn't there? Because there was. Okay, and so unless you got extra questions, we'll move on to Miami-Dade.
Well, I was going to – this has kind of been bothering me, but is there – because you mentioned Cherokee County, and mm-hmm. is there a specific – and I know you don't know all the county's numbers mm-hmm. off the top of your head or anything, but I mean
– I think there's 99
It seems
total.
To be – or maybe there's not is what I'm kind of asking. Is there more of this going on in certain areas? Because I know Cherokee County, I mean, that's – pretty obvious.
That's actually interesting question. Carolina Public Press recently did a 4-part series, and what they found is a lot of inequities in the system. Mm-hmm. So they dug really deep, but there's definitely more funding in certain places. And then they are somewhat autonomous, but the state has some control. One interesting thing was I interviewed the Foresight head of DSS. His name is Victor Isler, I think is the way you pronounce his last name. And I asked him about Title 4B and 4E and how they incentivize the snatching of children. And I said, isn't it true that the more kids you take, the more money you get from those programs? And he said, no. And then his boss said, well, of course, the more kids we take, the more money we get. But that doesn't mean we take kids to get money. So basically, even though Isler didn't set up the system, he lied to me. Of course they take kids for money. But the system is terrible on a lot of different fronts in North Carolina. There is not very good state oversight, and there isn't like matching protocols, and there's all kinds of problems with funding. Some places get a lot more than others, and you can learn more at Carolina Public Press. But the problem is so much deeper than just DSS. Because you can't go to the police. They almost never investigate. You can't go to the courts. They almost always cover it up. You can't go to DSS. They never investigate. And then the problem you have with going to DSS is they put you in a system like Danielle is in. Now she's in home services, which is the next step before taking your kids. And she did nothing wrong. It's the disclosure. And it's really unclear how they got her into that. It's a very confusing system. It has poor rules. It has very few rules. Obviously, you can say one thing on a website and say another thing under oath. I just read it for you. So really, the rules are almost non-existent. Look, the idea I have, if I ruled the world, I don't think it could ever pass. But here's a law for any state that I like that I think would help. Maybe not fix everything, but you ready? Mm-hmm. The court shall not appoint any guardian ad litem, custody evaluator, or other third party. Custody and divorce shall only be determined by the parents, their attorneys, and any evidence and witness they may call. That's it. Meaning that if you're in custody or divorce, there are no guardian ad litem, there's nothing. You call your witnesses, you present your evidence, the other side does the same, and the judge has to make a decision based on that. And you get rid of the Sierra Roysters. You get rid of their people. And I think it helps. It doesn't fix everything, but I think that helps. I think that actually helps a lot. I think a lot of the problem is these court professionals come in, they're vultures. All of these people are like Sierra Royster. She doesn't care about those kids. Kid in dog crate, who cares? Distance herself from that. This other lady is going to investigate. Daughter is afraid of mom all of a sudden. They have no rules. They do what they want, and what they want is to exploit this high conflict divorce. So get rid of them. Let the parents present their evidence, and then you make a decision. And what judges do is they use them so they don't have to make a decision. I'm going based on their recommendations. Nobody's recommendations, Judge. Yours. You're the judge. You don't like it, you can leave the bench. That's why they put the black robe on you. That's why they give you the so-called big bucks. All right? The parties, that's it. I think it would make it simpler, faster. Look, probably still the same kind of bad decisions. But, hey, at least you saved $100,000. You know how much these guardian ad litem cost? At least you don't have to pay the guardian ad litem anymore. So I think that would help. The other thing I'd point out is any law that you think has to be one paragraph, two paragraphs, three, any more, and it's too complicated. They just passed something called Kaden's Law in Pennsylvania, and go look it up. It's like 15, 20 pages. It's a disaster. It's going to do the exact opposite of what they think it's going to do because it's long. It's nebulous. It's not clear. And it gives everybody all of these different options for each part of the law. My law is very simple and straightforward. No more guardian ad litem. No more all of this stuff. That's it. The court, the litigants and their lawyers and whoever they call, and that's it. And that's the entire law. Whereas you look at these laws and it's funding for this, training for that, and all of that gets very, very complicated. And once it's applied, it's not applied the way you think it's going to be applied.
Wow. I mean, okay. Call me crazy, but it sounds like they're targeting, just like we've talked about in the past, they're targeting the people that are least likely to be able to defend themselves. I mean, I don't know the socioeconomics of Cherokee County, but I mean,
right,
Cherokee Indian Reservation. We're not talking about Charlotte or Raleigh, where we're full of bankers or NBA and NFL players or something like that, you know.
Right, Cherokee County is very poor. That's exactly right. DSS targeted poor people. They targeted people who they thought were uneducated. That's exactly right. In this case, look, Jeff has a lot more money. One other thing that the cop told me is a lot of in the localities in North Carolina, the local university often dominates. In Forsyth, that's Wake Forest. Check out what I found. The judge in Danielle's case, Gordon Miller, class of 1975, Wake Forest Law School. Dad's attorney, Dan Johnson, class of 1975, Wake Forest Law School. Children's Law Center run out of Wake Forest. Iris Sunshine, class of 1989. Big contributor to the Children's Law Center, Judge Linda Hutchins, class of 86, married to Dan Johnson, class of 75, Jeff's attorney. Sure, all quite coincidental. Sure. And this is all allowed. This kind of blatant conflict of interest, even though, of course, judicial canons say it's not allowed. But look, basically, if you practice law in Forsyth County and you graduated from Wake Forest, you're in. You're the deep state. You're the swamp. You'll get the benefit because most of the people practicing went to your school. If you're an outsider, you don't. And in Greensboro, it's UNC Greensboro. In another place, it's High Point. But it basically works the same. You go to that law school because you want to practice there, and that's going to give you an edge. And so if you're represented by someone from that law school, as Jeff Barrington is, you get the benefit. And that might be one reason why, despite putting his kid in a dog crate, despite throwing his kid while he's in a car seat. And by the way, there's a new one. Hit him with a big stick despite doing that, he still gets access to his kid because maybe his lawyer went to the right law school. Is that how this is supposed to work out? It's not supposed to be, but that's how it works.
The Good Old Boys Network is still alive and well all over the country.
Right, but that's exactly how it is. Yeah, and look, it throughout the state and like in the country, one of the first investigations I did was Emory University in Atlanta, and that dominates all. Emory dominates everything there.
Yeah.
So one, I don't know if it's still the case today, but about 10 years ago, half of CNN graduated from Emory, the other half from every other school in the nation. All right. So you're not going to, you know, if Emory does something bad, you're really not going to get a full investigation, are you? The local news is all Emory grads. CNN is Emory grads. The entire judiciary. How you think you're going to file a lawsuit against Emory? Well, guess what? 60% chance the judge went to Emory. Well, good luck with the lawsuit. So it's not just North Carolina. It's not just that locality. It's all throughout the country. Washington University in St. Louis, it's the same thing. And they dominate. They get this way overweighted influence, and it's totally corrosive. Man. Very corrosive.
It's a little off topic before we move on, but I mean, I always say this, and I reference the cult of academia, K-12 indoctrination, college, university weaponization, but what you're giving me just adds a whole nother layer to that, because the cult of academia also controls. I mean, I can only speak to North Carolina, but the Research Triangle, Duke, NC State, Chapel Hill, and the little satellite, it's not a satellite, but Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, same sort of control mechanism over so much of the economy of the state, over so much
and,
of the power holders within the state. So, I mean, follow the money, now, exactly who's going to pull the strings there.
I think Duke and North Carolina are really close to each other, but you think Wake Forest dominates Forsyth. What do you think is happening with Duke Law School in the county that Duke is in? Of course, that's even more overweighted. Look, Emory got that way. It's called the Ivy League of the South. Atlanta has a lot of universities, a lot of good universities. It's a somewhat great. And then this one is like on its own stratosphere, Emory, that is. And that's why. So it sort of got that influence, in a sense, through meritocracy. But this is corrosive. If you're in a certain county, if you went to that law school, then you're fine. But if you went to a different law school, then you're not fine. And that's not the way the practice of law is supposed to be. But it is. And in many, many counties, and not just in North Carolina. One last thing about academia. So Iris Sunshine runs the Children's Law Center, which is Wake Forest. So that Children's Law Center is run out of their law school. That's what I mean. Yeah. It's not like they're similar or the same. They're in Wake Forest. So she was sending an email to a clerk. And she tells the clerk that she's understaffed, so tell judges not to make new appointments for at least a few months. In the same email, she said, I'm currently on vacation. And also, Paige Gilliard, who runs her Guilford County, which is next door to Forsyth, that office, she's taking some personal time. Now, I think only in academia can you say, I'm very understaffed, we can't take on new cases, but that's not going to stop my vacation, right? Yeah. So they say, look, it's only an academic can do that. You're not even serious. You're not a serious person if you're like, listen, I'm on vacation while we're very understaffed.
Yeah, and the plumber, you know, ain't going to put – sorry, the fire department's not going to put – we're overworked. We can't come to your fire today.
The way I always describe it is, imagine you own a restaurant. Let's say you've got a bunch of, like wannabe actors who are working. Right, and that, like four of them got roles in a play. So now you're understaffed. Is that when you're going on vacation? Is that when you're like general manager? Take some personal time. No, right? But not under Sunshine, not the Children's Law Center, not Wake Forest. And I wonder if that's basically how academia is.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, whatever. No big deal. We don't want your staffing issues to interrupt your vacation. You know, you'll have plenty of time to cover up child abuse when you get back home. And so that's just a little thing, but it just amazed me that this lady can say, I'm on vacation. This other lady's taking some time off. Oh, and we're also understaffed. I said, hey, maybe you're understaffed because you're on vacation the same time. She's taking some time
off. Don't bother us with your
maybe
problems.
Maybe that's what's causing
kids.
The understaffed. So if anywhere else, you'd be fired for making a statement like that, but not at Wake Forest. Not at the Children's Law Center. Because, look, there's no rules, no oversight. It is. It's very similar to the way patent medicine was before the FDA came along. Look, I'm no fan of regulations, but you've created the wild, wild west. All right. They can tell you their job is to investigate on their website and then be put under oath and say, I'm not an investigator. And that's okay. It's okay. And that's because they don't have any rules. It was the same way that a snake oil salesman can come in and say, this cures cancer, it cures headaches. They can tell you whatever they wanted, sell it to you, and be off to the next town because they had no other oversight either. And that was patent medicine. Do you really want that with kids? So I think we want to move on now.
Yeah, let's get into the Dade County. I'm not trying to shortchange them.
Right. So this I picked up recently. Basically, there's a ring of lawyers, guardian ad litem, of course, judges, and then they bring in their court professionals to make a lot of money for themselves, to corrupt cases, and to basically hand wins to the client with the influential lawyer. And so the most influential lawyer is a woman named Dori Foster Morales. She is the outgoing president of the Florida Bar, so need I say no more about her influence. Now, do you want to take a guess at how much she charges per hour?
I'm guessing it's more than I can afford, so I don't know.
$700, at least in one case, $700 an hour. Man. Imagine. So she takes on this case, Gabe Shapiro, and she took on his ex-wife. So she represents his ex-wife. So they initially settle 50-50 custody. And then his ex-wife immediately starts saying contempt of court, this, that, and the other. And they got two young children. One of the children discloses abuse of a sexual nature. So here's how the so-called investigation was described to me by Gabe. The DSS caseworker interviewed his child in front of his mother, even though his mother was the one accused. When his child refused to disclose in front of his child's mother, the caseworker said, I'm going to testify that you're coaching the child. As a result of that influence, Gabe's then lawyer, Jordan Abramowitz, we'll talk about Jordan in a minute, he recommended a stipulation, which is basically an agreement, that he described as very temporary, that has since been used to, on a not-so-temporary basis, basically keep Gabe away from his kids. And since it's a stipulation, which means it's an agreement, it's even more difficult to break, though his new lawyer, name is Leslie Federico, thinks she could. But basically, Dori has everyone in her pocket because Jordan, in the other case that I'm following, Eric Satin represents Eric Satin's ex, and he's the aggressive lawyer. So Jordan only, it appears, rolled over and played dead because he didn't want to get in the way of Dori. He's very capable of being the bulldog attorney. In this other case, Eric's daughter came to, and this other case started with a false allegation of domestic abuse that was caught on body cam. So this is so great. So this is such a great microcosm of how courts work. So they file for divorce, and this is called the silver bullet technique. And so immediately Eric's ex wants to get leverage. So she calls in a domestic violence complaint, right? So she talks to the cops. And then about 8 minutes later, she talks to the cops again. So she's explaining the story the second time to the cops. And she goes, he took me, he threw me, and he pushed me to the ground. And the cops said, wait a minute. I interviewed you 8 minutes ago, and you said you weren't pushed to the ground. She goes, I was pushed to the ground. He goes, okay, well, settle down. But you said 8 minutes ago you weren't pushed to the ground. So her story's already changing, right? Then she said, I have a bruise here, there, everywhere. And then they go, well, hold on, ma'am. 5 minutes ago, you signed a waiver saying we shouldn't check you because you have no bruises. And all of a, and now she goes into like panic. What's going on here? So she's caught in two lies in 15 minutes. And there was a couple more lies, at least one more. Let's say a minimum of two lies. And by the way, it's on my YouTube. You can watch it. It's like 3 hours long, but the first 16 minutes are pretty strong, right? He's still arrested. She still gets the protective order. And that starts the ball rolling. Right now, he's able to get custody time back. His daughter shows up, not shows up. She tells him that her grandmother is suggesting that the daughter falsely accused dad of touching her. When he brings this allegation forward, they by this at some point they brought in a guard at litem. Her name is Cindy Kamen, and she comes up again. And here's a great anecdote about Cindy. So I talked to another guy, Ariel Cabrera. He had Cindy, and first it took him 6 months to get her to respond. She finally comes out for an in-home visit. 30 minutes into it, she's asleep on the couch. Hmm. All right, so that's Cindy Kamen's professionalism. So she is Cindy, and she had appointed this guy, Edward Chekowitz, who was also in Gabe Shapiro's case. Chekowitz is basically the hired gun to make the targeted parent seem like they're crazy. So they say that you, Eric, are coaching your daughter to say her grandmother is coaching her to falsely accuse you of molesting. I kid you not. That's what the accusation is. He's accused of coaching her to say she's being coached. I kid you not. And that's what they're using to keep her, his daughter away. And I've worked with some women as well. But the two guardian ad litem that I found is in the other case, the woman's name is Anastasia Garcia. So get this. In the other case, and I need to read this. Let me get Anastasia Garcia, basically she comes in to run interference. So she's working with Chekowitz to basically pull almost the same scam on Gabe that's being pulled on Eric, that you're crazy, you're the problem, and basically to put everything on him, right? So they've brought in like the umpteenth court professional on this case, right? And mm-hmm. It appears that this guy's actually serious, and he's going to take a look at it, like, honestly, and he's about to rule that Gabe should get custody of his children and everything, right? So Garcia's trying to stop this any way she can. And so they held a hearing, and I don't know if it's here, but they're basically, she wants this guy to get all of the, here we go. Here's the email. This is Anastasia Garcia. Miss Federigos, that's Gabe's attorney. It is inappropriate for you to send me this email. I asked that Dr. Seeley, that's the guy who's going to be doing the report, not reply. You and your client copy Dr. Seeley on every email, including your client emailing Dr. Seeley about yesterday's hearing. Dr. Seeley needs the full story and needs the transcript. Furthermore, let's be clear that Dr. Seeley is performing the psychiatric evaluation, not psychological. I'm sure there's a huge difference between a psychiatric evaluation and a psychological evaluation. What's happening here is, after I was brought in, Dory, who represents Gabe's ex, immediately filed a motion blaming me for everything. And in the other case, they filed a motion that's almost exactly the same. We've got time. I can read those two motions. Mm-hmm. And so then they held a hearing to basically to gag Gabe, except Gabe wasn't even at this hearing. And Garcia is saying that this doctor can't make his report until he gets a copy of the transcripts of this hearing, even though Gabe didn't testify. And she's saying it's inappropriate for Ms. Federicos to challenge her on this and to tell Dr. Seeley to go ahead and finish the report despite not having the six-hour transcript. And basically, Ms. Garcia is used to getting her way, so she's saying that's inappropriate. He needs to get this report. And it's obviously she's stalling. But this is the kind of like schemes and tactics that they use, and they normally get away with it. And we're going to see. Now, I want to get up. We got time for me to. So basically, I was brought in, and immediately I'm like asking a bunch of questions, and that made Dory and other folks quite nervous. So she, and I'm going to explain how Dory gets $700 an hour after I read a little bit from her motion. So here we go. He, referring to Gabe, has recently become involved and is in cahoots with a purported, in quotation marks, investigative journalist. I think she's referring to me. Desiring said journalist to both be included in all communications with the guardian ad litem. The undersigned and Gal both object to the insertion of this alleged journalist, again in quotation marks, in the manner described as above. Said journalist recently gave an interview falsely alleging a corrupt conspiracy by a ring in Miami-Dade County courts regarding corruption of supervision between supervisors and the gal, directly discussing the instant case by name. I guess that was bad that I discussed all of these cases by name. Claiming the system is covering up mothers' abuse of children, even though those allegations were debunked by all whom investigated. I told you the investigation was done in front of. Further claiming that the mediation privilege was somehow a violation of his rights to know everything about ongoing matters, and claiming Dr. Chekovitz's evaluation was bogus. So that's Dory. That's like a couple of pages of about 22 pages. Now, here's why she got $700 an hour. You ready?
Right.
She filed that ex parte, meaning without the other lawyer even knowing about it, on an emergency basis. It was basically acknowledged on the 21st of June. By the 23rd, they held a hearing. Now, do you think any other lawyer could get that kind of consideration, as we say, from the courts, right? I don't know. Maybe she's a good lawyer. It's possible. Dory may know the law. But she seems to know her way around the courts, and she gets stuff. And here's what's crazy. The court has ordered that Gabe pay Dory's bill. The court has ordered that Gabe pay Anastasia Garcia's bill. It gets even worse. Anastasia Garcia, she's the guardian ad litem. She hired an attorney. Guess who the court has ordered Gabe to pay that bill? Gabe. Gabe is paying everybody's bills. So it doesn't matter what she charges. The other party is going to pay the bill anyway. So look, the woman throws her weight around. He hasn't seen his kids in 6 months. I don't know how long it's been for Eric. There's a bunch of other examples. She's involved. Other people are involved. But that's how the ring works. You get allegations of abuse. You bring in a guardian ad litem like Cindy Kamen, like Anastasia Garcia. They bring in Chekovitz. Chekovitz, he says the protective parent is the crazy parent. Put all the blame on the protective parent. Keep the protective parent away. Now we got one last piece to it. What happens? Supervised visitation, and the exact same group is always picked. It is an organization called Family Crossroads Services Incorporated. So they were in both Gabe's case and in Eric Satin's case. Now, there was a somewhat honest, and I want to find this. Okay, here it is. So there was a somewhat honest supervisor from this FCSI for a couple of months, and she wrote an affidavit in Eric's case, and she was also involved in Gay's case. So here it is, part of the affidavit. Unfortunately, my experiences with Mr. Satin was similar to my experiences supervising other fathers with ongoing custody disputes in Miami-Dade. In Mr. Satin's case, it became obvious to me that FCSI was working with the court-appointed guardian ad litem, Cindy Kamen, in an attempt to falsely portray Mr. Satin as an incompetent father based on false allegations of mental health and or abuse. I received pressure from FCSI President Karen Sanchez to include information in Mr. Satin's report to falsely portray him in a negative light to the court. I have seen this happen whereby a guardian ad litem works with FCSI to inappropriately influence reports for the purposes of improperly impacting custody rights in favor of the other parents. So that's what this one supervisor said. In the other case, there's an audio that goes for about 30 minutes. Gabe walked into a building. He wasn't supposed to walk in. That wasn't how the order read. So Agatha was supervising him. I think three of her supervisors chewed her out, browbeat her, 30 minutes about why she allowed this to happen. At one point, she goes, I don't see what the big deal is. He's the father. And this guy chimes in, one of her supervisors. That's it right there. That's it. That's the problem. You saying that, I guess her saying he's the father, he is the father, by the way, is the problem. And she's browbeaten over something that probably was worthy of a maybe strongly worded email, maybe. But obviously, this is where she gets the idea that they're trying to influence, because they're browbeating her. The father's the problem. You heard it. And you hear it in the audio. Lots of people have investigated these reports of sexual abuse. They found nothing. We heard about the investigation. You did it in front of the perpetrator. Of course, the kid didn't disclose. It was a half-assed investigation. It was nothing. That's how they do it. That's how they get you in their vice. It's no different in North Carolina than the rest of the country. But that's basically the ring. It's just getting opened up. But I got, I think, 5 to 10 victims already. And these people, they float. Jordan Abramowitz, he's in both cases. Chekowitz in both cases. FCSI is in both cases. Cindy Kamen in a lot of cases. Anastasia Garcia in a lot of cases. Obviously, Dory Foster Morales, outgoing president of Barr, runs things. Can get ex parte hearing fast-tracked, obviously. So while you're working on that, I wanted to find the other motion. So in Eric Satin's case, the lawyers basically filed a similar motion about me. So let me read from a few pages. See if this sounds familiar. Consistent with the former father's highly unusual and erratic behavior throughout the litigation, the former husband has been communicating and fully invited, in quotation marks, journalist Michael Volpe to participate in these proceedings. At the outset, the former husband asked that Mr. Volpe join mediation between the parties on June 17, 2021, on the grounds that Mr. Volpe will be, quote, closely following the case going forward, a request which the former wife denied. Then on this past Wednesday, on June 23, 2021, the former husband gave an interview under his full name with Mr. Volpe that was posted on Mr. Volpe's website stating that, quote, Satin said the false allegations continued until the court settled on a charge that he coached his daughter to say that her mother and her mother's family was coaching her to make false allegation against him. So those two motions sound kind of the same. The one I read from Dory and this one talking about me and the mediation. So what happened is, I think it was Eric invited me to mediation, and they're all claiming that even though court is open, mediation isn't. And I was just like, well, do we have closed courtrooms? Because those are bad. And I said, you know, I just think that we should have open courtrooms. And I actually didn't necessarily argue that mediation should be open because it's sort of similar to like a contract negotiation. You wouldn't, like a baseball player wouldn't hold their contract negotiation on TV, right?
Yeah.
So, but I do think that, number one, the court finds a lot of carve-outs. I also think that if you need a carve-out, it's probably a bad idea. Like if mediation requires privacy, maybe mediation's a problem. But, you know, they basically both claim that I just wanted to be a part of everything I did. I think that the court process should be open. And I think that if you close the court process, you create a star chamber, which is the term I used. And that's all I really said. But basically, as soon as they came in both cases, and by the way, Eric, I think this will be released after Eric's hearing, but Eric's hearing will happen later. I think Tuesday, what is it, July 6th. And it was submitted like a week prior. So they also got a fast track hearing. So Jordan Abramowitz, Dory Foster Morales, they get things moving in the court. And that's why they charge a lot of money.
Man, there's so much to unpack there. I don't even know if we have time, but.
Go ahead. Questions?
To me, it just sounds like they're, and this kind of might be a little pedestrian, they're throwing the game. It sounds like the attorneys are in cahoots and they're point shaving or they're throwing games. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the Chicago Black Sox all over again, except the stakes aren't baseball. These stakes are children. The stakes are families. The stakes are parental rights. And they're insider trading, if you will. I mean, that's what's happening here.
Right, or another way to say it is a racket, racketeering.
Exactly, yeah.
And in fact, I haven't made this argument in these two areas, but it's basically the same argument. I think most of this stuff should be charged under RICO, which is the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. Now, a couple things. I don't know if you're on Twitter. I'm on Twitter
not anymore.
A little bit.
I got kicked off.
You kicked out. There's a great Twitter account called Bad Legal Takes. I add Bad Legal Takes. If you're on Twitter, follow them there. And they post terrible legal takes, mostly from Twitter. You'd just be stunned at what people think the First Amendment is. But RICO, if it's not like the most cited, it's right there. So everybody needs to be careful because RICO is really complicated. You think you know it, you really don't know. So here's what RICO is. RICO is if you believe someone's a member of organized crime, obviously the mafia, but not mafia is not the only form of organized crime. What happens is you charge. So let's say someone believes you are a member. Mm-hmm. You would be charged under RICO. They would have to prove what's called two predicate acts. So you committed at least two crimes in furtherance of the RICO conspiracy. So let's take John Gotti. They charged mm-hmm. him. In that case, even though murder already carries life, because the feds wanted the glory, and that's why the feds charged him. Okay, he was facing murder, and they charged him under RICO as if like, you can't get a sentencing enhancement. So because the killings that he approved were in furtherance of his family. So, and you have to prove all of that. And obviously it's much easier with the tapes and also the Sammy the Bull being a turncoat. But the crimes are things like murder, perjury, a whole bunch of things. They're called predicate acts. There's like a basket of them. And they're like basically crimes that typical criminal enterprises commit. Extortion, bribery, bookmaking, perjury, this, that, and the other. And so you prove that the organization exists. You prove you're a part of it. You prove you committed at least two crimes, and now you're convicted. If you prove it, a jury finds it, that you're under RICO, what happens? Then crimes that usually 2 years, 3 years, 20 years, and that's how they got people to flip. So I think this is, as you said, the game is fixed, right? Well, that's a racket. That's racketeering. Mm-hmm. If you're lying, they commit perjury. In fact, here, Dory lied about me. I don't know if it was perjury, but I'll read how she lied about me. If you commit perjury, you can – so you have to – basically, you'd first have to prove that this whole thing was a racket, that it was predetermined, they were going to take Gabe's kids, that these people were brought in to further it. And then you showed the perjury and the other obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice is when you lie, but not in court, but maybe on an affidavit or to a cop and other ways. But that's like – if you lie to a cop, you can be charged with obstruction of justice. It's just slightly different in perjury, but basically the same thing. But again, like if your job is to lie to cops and that's how you support the criminal enterprise, well, then you would be charged with like four counts of obstruction of justice under RICO because that's your contribution to the criminal enterprise. And that's what I think is going on in all of these cases. And these people should be charged under RICO, except the FBI doesn't see it that way. And I don't have the power to charge them. And the FBI doesn't really care. So they've never done it. I've asked them. Other people have asked them. They don't see it. They do love RICO. They love RICO. Let me tell you how much they love RICO. There's probably the two worst cops in the history of America. Stephen Caracappa and Louis Eppolito. And they were moonlighting as hitmen for the mafia. So they killed people as part of contracts that the mafia would pay them. They also would, on a monthly basis, give the mafia, like police intelligence, mm-hmm. so they could collect a second salary. So they would get money to be cops, and then they would sell out the people they were cops with to get more money from the mafia. So just killing people is murder, right? You can't get more than life for murder, but the feds still charge them under RICO. And they will – I don't know what they'll tell you, but I think they wanted the glory because these are high-profile cases. So they love RICO, all right? Just not when it comes to judges or guardian ad litem or lawyers like Dory. They don't see it as a crime. They don't understand that as you said, it's predetermined, all right? If everybody knows the outcome before it happens, that's not a case. That's a racket, and you're supposed to charge that. And especially if somebody was getting money under the table as a bribe. And that's why RICO is much easier to prove if you have a bribe.
Yeah.
And by the way, bribery is a predicate act itself. If you're bribing people as part of a criminal enterprise, you can be charged under RICO that way. And I do believe a lot of – not necessarily in these two localities, but I do believe a lot of this stuff includes bribery. But that's hard to prove. But easier for the FBI if they look at it. So far, they don't. So –
I wouldn't trust the FBI to investigate a lemonade stand. So, I mean,
right.
I'm not throwing out any accusations here, but it's all common knowledge that the mafia controlled elements of the mm-hmm. police forces in various right. cities, you know, New York, Chicago, any big city.
Right.
So
let me,
to me, it wouldn't be a big stretch to think that there's probably a possibility of some money being exchanged between some of these litigators, between some of these organizations, quote unquote, that are helping the children while they're still under the auspice of being a lawyer.
Right. A few anecdotes. There's a legendary FBI agent named Bill Romer who wrote a couple of books about one of them. They were about like mafia guys that he knew. Mm-hmm. Tony Accardo is the book I read, who is not that well known, but is 100 times the criminal figure than Al Capone is. And you say that, how is that possible? Capone was well known, but his reign was 5 years. Accardo was low key. He lived till he was 86. And by the way, Joe and Nick Boza, you know them? They play in the NFL, right? You heard of them? Yeah, they're his great grandchildren. Interesting tidbit. Fact, right. So Romer said that he got a call from Robert F. Kennedy in 1961 when Robert F. Kennedy was the attorney general. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know the landscape in Chicago. You know what's happening. Let's prepare a report. These guys down in Chicago, they don't understand. He showed them how the police and the mafia are intertwined, and they ignored it. And who ignored it? Richard J. Daley, Otis W. Wilson. Daley is Daley. Mm-hmm. That's the dad. There's Richard M. That was the son. The dad was a much better mayor, regardless of this. Otis Wilson's now a street in Chicago. Huh. So the police chief and the mayor who ignored this report, who did nothing about this report, they're basically – they're now monuments. There's a book called When Corruption Was King, and that shows how the mafia up through the 1980s in the city of Chicago chose the judges. Did you know? Read the book, When Corruption Was King. So that what you're saying is accurate. But here's the other thing I'd say about the FBI. The FBI is capable of great bad, as we saw with a number of examples of Trump. Look, the worst thing the FBI, in my opinion, the worst thing they did was in Boston with Whitey Bulger and allowing him to kill people as he was there, not even in their informant. I don't remember what he called it, consultant, right? Mm-hmm. And they just allowed it. And by the way, there was a guy named Paul Rico who before Bulger came along was being bribed. They had at least one bribed agent from the 60s, basically, through the 90s. That's really bad. But look, they're also the agency that produced Joe Pistone, Donnie Brasco. That's, you know, that's not just him. That's the entire agency. They did destroy the mafia. If you guys don't believe me, go look up a guy named Michael Francese, who used to be a mafioso, who talks about it all the time. It was the FBI. It was partially Donnie Brasco, lot of it. What Pistone did was otherworldly. 6 years, he thought he was going to be in 6 months. He was 6 years undercover. There's 100 times that he could have been killed, and he was able to maneuver. And with the backup, with the support. So you can't say the FBI is all bad. All right. But at the same time, up until the 70s, they kind of ignored the mafia. Why? Well, because their leader, J. Edgar Hoover, ignored the mafia. So look, they're capable of great things. They're capable of terrible things. As far as the courts are concerned, they appear to be. Here's the way I view the FBI. Number one, they, like everyone, are afraid of judges for whatever reason. But to me, the FBI is a very elitist organization. If you're a big deal, you're a senator. You know, like, let's say you go to your senator and you're like, here's this terrible federal crime, and the senator takes you to the FBI. I bet they'd investigate. Now, if you took that same thing on your own, I bet they wouldn't. I think if somebody with some weight comes to them, they investigate. If somebody they think is a nobody comes to them, they don't. I think that's generally how it works. I think they're capable of running these investigations. I think there's so much that they've done that's really impressive. Some of it we know. A lot of it we probably don't know. We maybe know the results. To say they've never done anything good is to ignore Joe Pistone and Donnie Brasco, which is totally unfair.
Oh, yeah,
and many other investigations. But to say they're perfect is ridiculous. Look no further than Whitey Bulger, who manipulated all of them. The whole entire office was manipulated by this very cunning criminal. But guess what? You deal with criminals. You're supposed to know they're cunning. You're supposed to know they manipulate. Nothing that Bulger did should have surprised you. You knew who he was. You knew his rep. It was a lot of different things, but it was that, like, to get him they thought it was such a big deal to get him to be an informant, which he claimed he wasn't. That's what he used. He knew that was his carrot, and then he used carrots, and he corrupted you. That's what I'd say about the FBI. But they're capable of it, but they have to want it. And one thing, the more people that understand it, they know about this. I've told them, many people have told them, they ignore it. It's mm-hmm. so terrible that they ignore it. They ignore it. They ignore it. They ignore it. I don't know if it's not sexy. I don't know if it's too much trouble, but they don't want to deal with this judicial corruption. And you're right. What's the end result? Kids get abused. Kids get put in bad situations. Kids get separated from their parents for months, years at a time. Parents get stuck with these ridiculous bills. They're destroyed. All of this stuff is allowed. I don't understand how Sarah Royster's testimony is not treated as perjury. On your website, you said your job is to investigate. When put under oath, you said, I'm not an investigator. Isn't that it's something, right? It should be something, but it's not. And nobody will do anything. And that's basically how everybody treats it. But over the last few years, I think that a lot of people have woken up. I think this Britney Spears thing will help guardianship abuse, which is very similar, get a spotlight. Britney's not the only one. She's not even close to the only one. And if you look at her case, they did to her what are scams all throughout the system. Look, you don't have to like her. You don't even have to think that she's mentally balanced to understand that a person should have their own life. It's patently ridiculous that this woman made tens of millions of dollars, but someone's now saying she can't spend them. Patently ridiculous. And it was done in the same lack of transparency, lack of due process, lack of rights way that everybody else is treated. And so I hope that her case will create some media attention. And a variety of cases in family courts have created that. And so I think we have made progress. And look, I do a lot of interviews where we talk about solutions. This whole thing, it takes time. Initially, nobody was even talking about it. Then we started talking about it. And we started talking about solutions. And so that's how it builds. People like Sarah Royster, Children's Law Center, they never thought anyone would suggest that their job should be eliminated. So we've at least gotten a little far. Even if your audience hears it, that's few people who now have heard that maybe her job should be eliminated. We're making progress. I don't know how much longer it's taking, but I don't take the same cynical view that a lot of other people are taking. I think a lot of progress has been made. One thing that I've noticed, I did that major investigation in St. Louis County. You can look it up. There was this big Zoom conference of a bunch of corrupt guardian ad litem that I got that was surreptitiously recorded. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this wasn't the first time, but I think that's ushered in a new era where the litigants, the parents, are turning the tables on the corrupt people by releasing audio and video and other documents, but audio and video in particular, because that's very powerful. That is them when they didn't realize they're being recorded. And there's a crime reporter who I really like. His name is George Anastasia. Used to write for the Philadelphia Inquirer for a long time. He's organized crime expert. And one thing that he says repeatedly is defense attorneys will tell you, you can't cross-examine a tape. And that's so it's true specifically to what he means. And he was talking about, like, in the context of, like, Gotti was dead to rights. Once they play that, you can't cross-examine the tape. He's on tape talking about murders. He's on tape talking about himself approving murders. What are you going to say? Well, you can't cross-examine the tape. And it's sort of the same thing. When you're Sarah Royster and you hear her say, well, I'm not an investigator, even though the website says you are, you can't cross-examine that. And a lot of that has come out in North Carolina and Miami-Dade. This thing from, like, the recording of the FCSI people browbeating Agatha, if you have time, it's like 30 minutes, if you have time. Very interesting how they try to influence her. These kinds of things are coming out left and right in all sorts of parts of the country. There was a one that you'd probably be interested in. There's a out of Florida, a judge named Dale Cohen, who went into a two-minute pro-mask rant against this woman who was kind of anti-mask, though all she did was a few months earlier post a photo of herself in an office without a mask. And he said, you're one of these anti-mask zealots. I'm not letting you see your kid. And she recorded it. And now it's out there. And she didn't get her child back. What she did do was get him recused. The second thing is it's out there. It hangs over him for the rest of his life. In St. Louis County, we caught a judge named Nicole Zellweger browbeating a 14-year-old who was telling her that she's being molested by her father. And she said, I don't care. I'm still sending you to your father. It's out there forever, Nicole Zellweger. But that's out there forever. So in Foresight, this guy Kent Webb, the caseworker, took Danielle's two children. She's got a daughter and a son. And he's on audio being asked for a court order and saying, I don't need one. So that hangs out there. And by the way, I called him. And, you know, they're supposed to have privacy. They're not supposed to answer my questions, not specific questions. I asked him about the case, and he basically said, I didn't take the kids. We just transferred them from her to her ex. And he thinks that's a lot. He thinks that DSS could make its own court order and say, now we're going to make the father have sole custody. And he was okay with that. So he not – and of course, that's not actually allowed. So he lied about why he took the kids, lied about his reasons, then talked about it, and for some reason he still has a job.
Man, I mean, what you just said alone should enrage everybody. I mean, that's communist China, that's Stalinist Russia, that's Nazi Germany. When they just knock on your door,
Take your kids.
Hey, where's your quarter? We don't need one. We're just taking your kids. I mean, that's kidnapping. That's exactly what that is. That's no different than a mafia boss coming and taking somebody's wife or whatever. I mean, that's just sick, man.
Right. And they once called out on it, they start to obfuscate. And he has a boss. Her name is Teresa Wright. She's on another recording actually saying, Danielle, we never took your kids. Bill Clinton is one of my favorite presidents. I'll say it from every rooftop. I don't care if you got conservatives. By the way, if you're a conservative, balance budgets. That's one of the reasons why
I
like them.
That's why this is such an important issue because
it's so
Clintonian. It's across the board. They're taking everybody's kids, folks.
Right. It's so Clintonian to say we didn't take them. It's Clintonian. It's the definition of is. That's what I mean. Go look. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're a millennial. Go look up the definition of is. Bill Clinton, that's what he said. Somebody asked him a question. It depends on the definition of is. Of course it does, Bill. But it's to say it depends on the definition of take. We didn't take your children because your children were moved from you to your ex. So that means we didn't take them. We don't have. You don't. It's true. You don't have them anymore. They were with you and they aren't anymore. That doesn't mean we took them.
It's just that Edward Bernays marketing thing. It's not the Department of War. It's the Department of Defense. It's not torture. It's extreme rendition. You see, it's totally different. All right. It's crazy.
Right. Definition of is. And it's allowed. There's no oversight. There's no accountability. And that's really – it's the same. It's this FDA. I think that's a pretty good metaphor. It's kind of how food and drugs used to work.
Yeah.
Say what you want. Package it how you want. Treat it how you want. People would sell spoiled meat all the time because it was allowed. I, as I said, I'm no fan of regulation. Without the FDA, none of this stuff would be in place. It's the same thing. I can put on a website that we're responsible for investigating all aspects of the case, and I can say under oath, I'm not an investigator. So, you know, you can do that. You could do that with food and drugs once too. You can't now. You can't, you know, there's still, it's not a perfect system. But if you're thinking that the way we have it now is no better than like the 1870s, go look up what the 1870s were like.
Crazy,
it's
man.
Better. Okay. Maybe
you get an electrician
perfect.
To wire your house and the house burns down. He's a licensed electrician. They come and say, well, I'm not really an electrician. I mean, I'm a painter. I don't really do wiring. I mean,
correct. And they don't have that kind of like licensing and board. And look, the bar, they treat it differently. Yeah, you're right. That licensed electrician, if he screwed up your house, you would go to the licensing board and hopefully they'd suspend or take his license. And
exactly.
That's what the point of the license is for. But they don't really have that with Guardian Ad Litem. They don't really have that with psychologists. They do have their oversight boards. They don't do anything. Do you think that the bar would take action against the outgoing president of the bar?
No,
of course not. Come on. So, you know, they don't have this kind of oversight, and it's the wild, wild west. And you're right, it's the wild, wild west, not with your food, not with your drugs, with your children. And look, anybody can be caught in the web. What do you do if your ex is hitting the kids? You have to involve these agencies, and they refuse to investigate. It's really disgusting. It's terrible, and it's not just a national problem. It's a global problem. I think we've got time. I do a weekly live stream, which we do tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern. Megan Fox, go to Megan Fox Writer, or I don't remember what her YouTube channel is, but we once interviewed a woman named Liz Perkins from the Daily Express in England, and she basically has tracked for the last 2 years essentially the same problem with the cover-up of domestic violence in family courts in England that we, Megan and I, have done over the last few months. And the problems are almost like 90% the same. Judges dismissing it, court professionals dismissing it, poor investigations, no investigations, cover up, clearly biased towards the alleged perpetrator. The same kind of problems. You can find that interview. You can find her stuff online. It's the same kind of cases, but it's just out of England. Same kind of thing in Canada, Australia. You have a global phenomenon where these domestic abuse allegations, it's not that we should assume they're true, but right now the default position is to assume they're false, and you're really supposed to investigate them properly. You know, I told you Melissa Tunes, when someone sees her daughter grabbing for a crotch, trying to, that seems to be very powerful evidence, and somehow you keep saying that Melissa is bringing forward false allegations of abuse when I'm finding an affidavit with somebody else. So you're obviously not investigating this thing properly. It's very problematic. It's not a North Carolina problem, not a Miami-Dade problem, definitely in those places. It's a national problem. One thing, this is a good anecdote. So I called the North Carolina legislature and I explained. I was like, I think this is a legislative issue. You guys need to rein in Garnet Lightham, right?
Yeah.
And he's talking to me for a little while and he goes, here's the problem. The sort of legislation you're talking about, we're not going to be able to pass it till 2023. Why? Well, because apparently this legislation can only be passed in odd years. I know what you're thinking, John. 2020, you're right. You haven't forgotten math. Mm-hmm. 2021 is an odd year. As it turns out, the year is actually over for them. You can't introduce any more legislation this year, so it's another 2 years. So like that's another part of the problem. You can't really fix things. They're all really slow to work. But
In the meantime, kids are just getting destroyed out there in North Carolina. Thanks.
Right, and they can't do anything until 2023. All right, anything else? I think we got a good in-depth discussion on those two areas.
I think we killed it today. I mean, there's a lot more we can talk about. I feel like we could talk about this for another four hours. But
one last thing, if you want to support my work, there's a bunch of ways. But Dory Foster Morales, by the time this comes out, should be on a T-shirt. Go to Bonfire, put in Dory Foster Morales on a T-shirt, and the T-shirt that I put together should come up. So hopefully you'll pick one of those up. But basically, it's a way to turn the tables. There's other T-shirts. Kent Webb, the guy who took the kids with no court order, he's on a T-shirt. It's a way to turn the tables and also to raise awareness. Because if you're wearing the T-shirt, probably someone's like, what is that? And then you explain who Dory is. And you get them interested in the story, and then they check things out. That's it. Thank you for having me on. And hopefully I'll be back in a few months.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. And if you'll send me those links, the ones you just mentioned, the new ones, I'll put those on your guest info as well, so we can support that.
Okay.
Well, again, I thank you so much for being on, Michael. We've got to do it again because there's sadly no end to this. It doesn't seem like, anyway, so.
Okay, very good. We'll talk soon.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, we're good.
All right. Well, if you missed any of that, folks, fear not. You can go to anomicage.com. I'll have all those links that Michael mentioned as well as his other links. And I'll even put the link in there with Megan Fox. That show's going to be on tomorrow, so please check that out. Mm-hmm. As always, say you can't do everything, but you can do something. So be safe out there, and I'll be seeing you sooner than later in the Anomic Age.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age Project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's A-N-O-M-I-C-A-G-E.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go to the next one.